It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And here we are on the 1st of December, 2017, and there's no snow coming down. I want to welcome into the studio two people, Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Good morning, Mike.
And good morning. And then over beside her is Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning. Happy December and happy holiday season to everyone.
Hey, great. And on the phone, Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Thank you, Mike, and everybody. It's good to be here.
So we know that things are happening. We believe that things are happening at a distance in Washington, D.C. A whole swirl of activities involving voting on a tax bill in the Senate. The realization at the last moment as discussions continued that maybe there were some things in there that they needed to look at and deal with before they brought it to the Senate floor. Issues associated with ANWR, whether it had been properly gone through a process. Whatever happens today, we know that the result, if it's a step forward in approval of some legislation, will have to go to a conference committee. So this is not the end of the game. But once again, my impression is that whole question of you move too fast, you miss a number of important considerations. Not so much getting a thing you want into the bill, but just the implication of what you put in there. And I'm wondering, Terry, do you have any comment about that?
I was hoping Mark would go first on this one. You know, as my friend John Arono has just said on Facebook, let the dominoes fall. I just don't know how this is going to shake out. They just aren't listening to the public because the polling on this just is dismal in support of this. I think they're betting on people that do find some tax relief in the middle class, which it's beginning to look like there's few of those, and they're betting on people that don't interact with them when they lose their insurance, and seniors that are stand ready and to see their Medicare and Medicaid cut aren't going to react. Those are some long bets to me, and I don't know where they're at other than the fact that they're desperate to get something off the table and pass this year. That is really, and get their funders satisfied. And that it's the donor class that they're really needing to appease here before the end of the year so that this administration can claim they did something. And they're betting that none of this fallout will actually happen before the 2018 elections. But I think that's a really long shot at this point. People are pretty up in arms about this tax bill.
Well, a lot of the fallout is designed to not hit until long after 2018, but I don't think we will need to wait for people to actually feel it, because once the Congressional Budget Office, for example, scores it, it's going to make clear what a lot of the critics are already saying. So I think it could have big-time feedback in the 2018 election, but time will tell. The fact of the matter is nobody really knows for sure everything that's in it and how it will shake out just because of the process and how it's been sort of rushed through again with no real process. Serious vetting or any kind of piecemeal taking a part of it. So I think the biggest flaw here again is the process.
Okay, and the group of people that are of great concern right now are those who either develop all of the algorithms that are used in the electronic tax packages that are available, or the accountants that have to figure out, some of this, does it take place so that we just do business as usual for 2017 and then we have to rapidly get ramped up for whatever it is
clear.
In 2018?
I don't think a lot of this takes effect until 2019.
So it's down the road and it'll give some time, right. But the real question, I thought, was the difficulty with which an individual would have in saying, okay, from what we know, how would this affect me? There's enough blurriness to make that the case, but we haven't heard from Zaz. So how far up on the radar are the tax issues for you?
That's in terms of my reporting, which is why I'm here. It's kind of out of my wheelhouse, but certainly I think that the public, there's a lot to unpack in this bill, and it keeps changing. And so I don't think that the average citizen knows what to expect, and it's I think it's pretty easy to spin in that case.
Okay, well let's go to one of the other components that had been inserted into the package, and that's the legislation on ANWR. There are a number of people who have suggested that that's what has bought off Lisa Murkowski's vote, and obviously along the way, Dan Sullivan. A response that he has made to some of the discussions of whether this is within the rules to do in this fashion, I think indicated that many people realize that this is a weedy issue. It's a very convoluted process, and there are good reasons that have been given why you pass legislation through committees so that you vet what is happening, et cetera. And to Terry's earlier point and Mark's as well, the process seems to be just being once again tossed aside, even by those people who have suggested that they're in favor of process. And that would be either Lisa Murkowski, John McCain, others. It seems that when push comes to shove, we're down to saying there's some other measure that people are using in order to cast their vote, and I'm not sure what that is.
Well, I think you have to kind of wait and see what happens with the amendments, because I don't know that there's the support for ANWR that may make it. I mean, there could be somebody, I would expect a Democrat probably to get up and amend to take that out of the bill. And I'm not sure there's really that energy to keep it in there. And the final thing, we've got a lot of hurdles to go through before this is a final bill. And it may, unless the House just rolls over and said, yeah, we take what the Senate gives you, still has to go to some type of reconciliation there. But I think it's something that's on Lisa Murkowski's and Sullivan's radar. It's their have-to-have list. And it has to be in there for them. But I'm not so certain it's that way for the rest of the country as a priority when you're really getting down to the trading of horses when at the very end.
I agree it may not be important to senators from the rest of the country, but if they realize that they're only going to get to the finish line if they get the votes from Alaska, mm-hmm. you know, that, in my mind, should be enough. They're certainly not counting on any Democratic votes anyway. Mm-hmm. So if they keep their caucus in line, they should get it. A side note, I suspect Dan Sullivan would have supported the tax bill even without the ANWR provision. But
yeah, there's definitely deficit deafness going on here for somebody. And that's the other thing I think we're going to have to watch is to see, since that has been the rant for so many years, 8 years of the Obama administration, about the deficit, and nobody, even Paul Ryan, no one is pretending that this isn't going to put trillions of dollars on the deficit, which in the end should raise interest rates up. It's going to be interesting how they talk their way out of that when they go back to their constituents, and that has been the mantra.
And there's also a certain amount of health care deafness,
yep.
too, because by repealing the mandate, you know, we've heard all the doomsday scenes, but even if you figure, you know, half of it's true, it's going to affect a lot of people. And it seems like this, you know, decades-long quest for the holy grail of drilling in ANWR is driving everything for the Alaska delegation.
Right, and if you look at the last bill that they just voted down, health care bill, part of it was due to the fact there wasn't enough process. And we're right back here where, you know, some people decided not to vote for it.
Well, and John McCain in particular, mm-hmm. you know, scolded everyone for not going through the process, and then they basically did the same thing with this tax bill, and not a peep from John McCain this time.
So, do you feel more secure? Because there was another major event that happened, and that was North Korea's firing of a ballistic missile, which, in my sense, reduced the likelihood that Alaska will be a target. With all of those other targets now of Washington, D.C., New York City, et cetera, do you feel the relief? Zahas?
I don't think relief is the word that comes to mind when I think of our relationship with North Korea right now, and especially with Rex Tillerson probably on the way out. I don't know. I mean, Hawaii is testing a new siren, and but that point well taken, Mike. I suppose I certainly wouldn't wish it on anybody, though.
Right, right, quite true. And it, I just brought that up because sometimes we have to remember that we are here in Alaska and we have some local concerns that are important. It might be the weather. It might be things we're working on that are very local and significant. And yet out there in the world, there are things happening that will affect us that we are, if we don't pay attention to, and I'm not sure how you would pay attention enough to protect against, say, some action on a tax bill that will dramatically adversely affect individuals living in Alaska, or, for that matter, on the way you relate to North Korea, so that we who are, even though not maybe prime targets, maybe still, are still pretty close and are going to have some involvement should a very nasty war begin. And I think that's the question that people ask. What can I do as an individual when faced with the bigger international style events? And probably conveying, being aware is step one, and then conveying your feelings and asking your questions of those people that do represent us in Congress and beyond. But Zaz, you have been covering some local activities which are important, and I think one of them has to do with the wall, our Alaskan wall. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's the Veterans Wall of Honor, the military service memorial that currently is it's near Matsu Regional on that kind of overlook near the highway and next to the old visitor center, the log building that's now going to, at some point, going to be torn down because Matsu Health Foundation owns the property now. It was originally, the borough sold it to a company that was going to put in senior facilities, and that company didn't quite get what it wanted from the state in terms of a license, and so it sold to its competing company. The competing company has a location somewhere else and didn't want it, and sold to Matsu Health Foundation, which views it as sort of a strategic acquisition, that land right in the front yard of, you know, the only hospital in Matsu, where any number of competitors, including Providence System, have been, I'm sure, eyeing that property. And so in the meantime, the memorial, which is a series of heavy granite panels, needs to find a new home. And so everybody involved sang the praises of the partnership that it has achieved what's going to be a move of these panels, which weigh, you know, I think it's, what, 800 pounds, some of the big ones, will be moved to the site of the Wasilla's new police station, which is going to be where Iditarod Elementary was, the old Iditarod Elementary site. So the wall will be moved there. The veterans groups behind the wall hope that it will be all moved and in place in time for next Veterans Day.
So how did they get the veterans groups on board? I remember a while back when this first started to stir, there was a little bit of outrage among the veterans, you know, one, that the borough would sell off that land, and two, just the idea of having to move the monument. How did they get these people on board?
I don't think they had a choice, frankly. I mean, that the wall needed to move because Matsu, the Health Foundation, at some point would want to use that property for something else. And the foundation is, between the foundation and the city of, and the borough, they're going to pay for the move. And so, you know, I think overall, with the partnership that's in place, and there's a slightly different veterans, the folks, the couple who started the wall, kind of ceded control of it over to the five Matsu veterans groups. And so I think there was a little bit more conversation going on between the veterans, representatives directly to the city of Wasilla, the Matsu Health Foundation, the different players involved. But yes, there was, and I think there still is, some hard feelings about that, the way that whole process played out.
Yeah, I think Bert Cottle was on top of this the whole time. He's been pushing for that wall to move to Wasilla for a long, long time. And
he has family members with names on that wall.
Mm-hmm. And so I think there's been a push for that.
Was there not talk originally of putting it in Iditarod Park?
There was talk of putting it in a few existing memorial areas or parks, and I think the veterans wanted their own site just to set it apart.
I think one of the, as my memory serves, interesting things, and you've referenced it a bit here, is the $150,000 that the borough agreed when they were looking at partnering with the group that had purchased the land and was going to put up a facility. That seemed to, I think it's the, it's interesting because when they went away, there was a need for another $150,000, and having the Health Foundation step in and do that, it was important because it sounds as if this is going to be required for all of this move to happen and set up. So I think the end result is that the veterans groups and the community receives the wall in a good position, and the city of Wasilla has, as you so rightly put it, facilitated making this happen, staying with this over a long period of time through very convoluted ownerships and all the rest. So I think there's an amount of praise to be offered to those who have not given up and to have been able to make this balance happening.
So, Zaz, is there any indication of what the Mattsu Health Foundation plans to do with that property?
No, not that I've heard publicly or from them directly.
Okay. So that seems to be on its way to be completed. We do know that the borough will be having an assembly meeting next week, as well as the school board. Terry, did you have any sense of what is likely to be appearing and coming up that will be a focus there?
We talked about this Thursday. I know the plastic bag ordinance is back on as unfinished business. And if I was a betting person, I would say it'll probably die right there, or it'll probably get kicked again, but maybe not. Maybe Zaz has some insight with that. But the old ordinance is still there as they kicked it down to get the road, and that probably... Dr. Doty was the one that brought it to the table, and I think the other piece of unfinished business is a sort of a town hall or a community outreach program that Assemblymember Sykes wanted to do about crime in the valley, and he was trying to get a motion moved that the borough would host something like that, and so we'll see what's happened now that the nail's been put in SB 91, if that continues on. Those are the two things that stick out to me the most.
Okay.
I'm just looking at the agenda.
Seems like something that could be done jointly with the Juneau delegation.
Yeah. Well, they've already had that, or they had it scheduled and they didn't have enough. I think they had it scheduled and they didn't have a quorum of legislators to show up to have the meeting that they normally do.
Okay.
So I don't know that that's happened, but hey, Zaz, any last minute word about the sled dog drama? I've been meaning to ask you that.
The Iditarod Trail Committee is meeting today.
Okay.
At 1 o'clock in Anchorage, and it's unclear whether they're going to talk more about drug scandals or other events. Dallas Beebe has been announced already was out of Iditarod for 2018, but is doing a race in Norway. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. It's a big and they're very glad to have a big sled dog car over there. So we'll see if Iditarod brings all that up today or kind of continues what sometimes is a tradition of trying to keep it all up below board for as long as possible.
And Dallas Seavey is going to Europe sort of as a protest, right?
Well, he can't race, right?
He's out of Iditarod as a protest, so...
Right, but that was his choice to go out of the Iditarod. Was that not true?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
So what we'll be looking forward to is some further discussion, because we're into December. Although the weather has not been cooperating to provide great training conditions, The Iditarod is still on track. There are some interesting continuing questions regarding sponsorships, et cetera, and how all of this this focus of attention will result in not only the bigger sponsors, but individual sponsors for mushers, because they're very dependent. They're out there very dependent upon individual sponsors for their own support as they walk into this. So it doesn't sound like it's completed yet, and there will be some continuing discussion, I know. Did you cover by any chance any of the further discussions that have to do with, it was an interesting, a very interesting piece that Sam Cotton had in the paper, the Anchorage Daily News now, renamed, that dealt with a group from outside that had some concerns about whaling, or I'm sorry, about taking of bear with cubs in the den. And what was very interesting about it, and I need some other perspective, because as portrayed in the article, the group came in with some concerns about what was being done for subsistence hunting of bear in the methods used, et cetera. And when all was said and done, they went away saying, thank you very much. We more fully appreciate what this this involves when you live there and you've had historical hunting of that sort. And I thought it was a very interesting example of what might happen if it was entirely accurate. But I raise that because it's the kind of example that would apply to other discussions. Very often, outside groups are looked at as being not very knowledgeable coming in, whether it's ANWR or bear or whale or whatever, and stepping in and affecting things without having a local knowledge. But I just would point to that and say that may be a good model for what is necessary so that people who are outside of Alaska and have concerns are able to get better information.
Yeah, I've kind of kudos to the Anchorage Daily News. There's been some really good letters to the editor. There were several really good ones on the tax issue that we talked about earlier, and there was an excellent one by a young woman about the sexual harassment that we're seeing and all the fallout from that. I thought was excellent. So kudos to them. I think they've been putting some good letters up there.
Okay. Yep. Well, that is our last topic, that of harassment. Once again, we've seen yet another person. This is a person that I have enjoyed watching and listening to for many years, Garrison Keillor, the bard of Lake Wobegon, who has appeared here in Alaska at the Alaska State Fair a number of times, has provided insightful commentary and the rest, appears to have fallen afoul of an allegation of harassment that has resulted in his dismissal from a number of the locations where he still appears. And I was curious about that, whether, Zaz, do you have any impression or feelings associated with that?
I think that it's Garrison Keillor, the accusations against Garrison Keillor, at least what I'm reading in reports from Minnesota, don't come as a great surprise to some Minnesotans who have been kind of, I don't know if it's been publicly, allegations have been made in the past, but certainly it's a part of a pattern of behavior, at least some reports I've read. All these cases, the specifics are fairly different, but disappointing.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah, that true. Terry?
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is probably a whole radio show. We could talk about it. Every day is...
Or six.
Yeah, right. I mean, you pick up the social media or the newspaper in the morning and go, who's next? Because I don't think it's by... What I worry about at this point is it becoming a normalization that people say, oh, him too, or her too, or, you know, and that we aren't stopping to... And I think also, not to defend Garrison Keillor or anybody, but... The cases are all very, very, very different, and the evidence in all of them are very, very, very different. And I worry a little bit that we're judging a lot on new facts that haven't all rolled out about all of these things, and that some of the victims may be afraid to come out now because there's so much publicity. So there's a lot to unpack, as my friend Zaz says about complex things all the time with this.
Yeah, but the flip side of that is it's also, I think, being viewed more and more as a safer environment to come out and tell stories in. So, you know, time will tell, as with everything. But, we're seeing some serious unraveling now for sure. Mm-hmm.
So let me just check with the panel. I am not aware of anyone in Alaska that has suffered the same set of allegations. Have I missed something?
Senator David Wilson, to some degree.
Okay. Any others?
Only sort of whispered. Certainly not anything in public, but I think that shoe's about to drop.
Okay. So the ripple, we may come to Alaska, and we may find in one of our next shows that we'll have reporting on allegations to people here in Alaska. With that, I want to thank the panel for contributing today to another edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Zaz Hollander for calling in. Thank you, Zaz.
You're very welcome. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Okay, and I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming into the studio. Thank you, Terry.
Ditto to what Zaz said.
I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming in also to the studio today.
Always happy to drop in and chat.
Okay, well, we'll be back again next week for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.